Thank you. And at this time, I would just like to advise everyone that the conference is being recorded. Should you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
And remember, please, as we start the meeting, that it's also being transcribed, so it's important that you identify yourself when you speak so that the transcribers can put down who's talking. Sometimes they can pick it up from context, sometimes not. But last week, I want to compliment everybody. Did a really nice job with that, and it really helps. For anyone who's using a speakerphone, that's fine, and I recognize the convenience of that when you're listening, but it is helpful if you use either headphones or the handset when you're speaking. It'll come through clearer. I want to welcome Victoria. And Victoria, tell us all how you pronounce your last name so I don't mess it up.
Sure. No one gets it right without some assistance. It's McKivity.
McKivity. Okay. McKivity. And correct me if I foul that up in the future.
McKivity. No problem.
Okay, and welcome. And you're in London, is that right?
That's correct.
Well, thank you for joining us, representing the NCUC. Appreciate that very much. There have been several suggestions on the agenda. Are there any other comments on the agenda? Is it okay as is? Any changes suggested? Any more changes? Okay, then the next thing I want to talk about is the status of missing interest statements. And by the way, Victoria, thank you for being so prompt in submitting yours as a new member. Edmund Chung has submitted an interest statement. Now, I have requested a little bit more information from Edmund on his interest statement, although I think it's fine for him to participate today. Sophia Michaela, who is a liaison for the IDN Working Group, has not submitted one, and... I assume that should be forthcoming because the questions she asked in that regard have been answered by both me and by Rom, who's the chair of the IDN working group that she is liaison from. Still no word on the GAC liaison. So what I'm going to do now, before we talk with our experts this morning, keep in mind, as I think I said on the list, that we have Mingjung Park, who's a liaison from the CCNSO. And Mingjung, because of the terrible hour in Korea when we hold these meetings, is not able to join our calls. But please take advantage of her with regard to liaisoning with the CCNSO, in particular with issues like two-character domain names and any others where you think the CCNSO might be able to be helpful there. And her email address is contained on the contact list, and I just sent out a new version of that. I think it was yesterday. Could have been today, for all I know. And then Sophia, of course, is a liaison to the IDN Working Group. Of course, today we're going to be able to talk with the chair of that group. Okay, I'm going to jump right in to the expert consultation with Ram Mohan and Carrie Karp. Ram, as I think all of you know, is the chair of the IDN the GNSO IDN Working Group. He is also a member of the President's IDN Committee. In fact, so is Carrie Karp, who's with us too. They're both members of that committee. They're both members of the IDN Guidelines Group. Both of them have been very active in IDNs on the technical and policy side for years. And now Tina is not able to make it today because of travel. She is actually probably on a plane right now, and if she wasn't, it's like 3 in the morning or something. So she sent her apologies, but we'll try to participate via email if she can following this meeting. So now let's get right to, and hopefully everybody had a chance to look at the questions that I put together. I didn't see any new ones from anybody else after I sent that to the list, but I do want to encourage those of you who have questions related to the reserve name category that you're working on in your subgroup, certainly feel free to ask questions today. The general question, let me start off with the general questions. In cases where IDN versions of reserve names should be reserved, okay, and keep in mind that each of the reports should talk about whether there's need to, whether there's a recommendation to reserve IDN versions of the names you're, a category of names you're considering. In those cases, should the reserved names include the ASCII-compatible ACE form, which is the A form in the latest draft that was put out, and the local script form, Unicode, or what is called the U form? And I don't know which one of you guys want to jump in first, Rom and Carrie, but whoever does, feel free.
Carrie, do you want to lead?
I can lead. I would like to ask some clarification first, Chuck. When you speak of the IDN version of a non-IDN name, how are you dealing with translated equivalents to a pre-existing label that don't require the use of Unicode characters for correct display? Is that a separate issue?
Well, we're going to get to that a little bit more later on, but it is good you bring that up. And in fact, why don't you, for the sake of the working group, explain what you're getting at there? I think that would be helpful for those.
Okay, I'm getting at the following, and that is, as we provide localized equivalents to existing labels or introduce new labels in languages that bear no relationship to English whatsoever, we're not necessarily entering the realm of IDN. There are any number of languages that are written using undecorated Latin characters and therefore would be regarded as ASCII names, but they're not English. And we can easily see some TLD label that is displayed using ASCII characters evocative of or explicitly associated with English vocabulary, correlating to another ASCII sequence that is a translated version of that label. So the internationalization of the namespace is not the same thing as the deployment of IDN. So the need for non-ASCII Unicode characters is an issue which is subordinate to what I believe your primary concern is. Is that what you wanted me to say, Chuck?
Yeah, no, that's helpful. And we are, you're correct. Obviously, the reserve names categories, as you're very familiar with in the current registry agreements, because you have one of those, you know, does relate strictly to ASCII, and one of our tasks, of course, is, okay, what should the reserve names list include with regard to IDN names, both at the the top level and lower level? So we'll be looking at specific categories as we go through. Anybody have any questions for Carrie on what he just said? Rom, you want to add anything there?
Chuck, I was just going to wait for the response to that before I added something there. I think what Carrie points out is an important clarification to the larger question, and perhaps your working group would be well advised to not only restrict its analysis to the U form and the A form, but to really look at what is considered an equivalent of a name that is deserving of reservation.
Could you give us an example of that?
Of
an equivalent?
Well, this is back to what Terry was saying. There are a number of names where you do not require a character set, a specific Unicode character set to represent it. In recent mind, an example that immediately pops up is Voyage, V-O-Y-A-G-E. It's a French word. And it does not require any accented characters or anything special. It can be written just normally in a using normal Latin script that to the unaided eye looks identical to the regular English language domain name or a TLD label called Voyage.
What would be the implications of that for reserve names?
Well, I guess what I'm recommending is the following, that there are two things here. One is to think about not only the Unicode form versus the ASCII form, but to consider, I view it a little bit more of a continuum that you can have a name that is in the ASCII form, if you will, that may have another ASCII form that is an exact translation.
Okay.
There is one way that you can render this concrete. I'm now going to take this to what I regard as an absolutely impracticable extreme, but nonetheless, it pegs one of the endpoints of what you might be aiming towards, and that is to the extent that a reserved name is a dictionary word or is clearly evocative of a dictionary word in some language, that same word or some abbreviation with similar evocative connotation in every other language that you're considering has to be included. So if we're taking voyage, the French word voyage will appear in any French Thai, French Chinese, French German, French Japanese dictionary, and whatever it is on the other side of that definition needs similar reservations. So at some point, you might want to consider a list of languages that are going to enjoy whatever reserve protection you think is reasonable, but obviously, I don't even need to say obviously, it goes absolutely without saying that that would be an enormously intricate task in and of itself, the political and cultural and everything else sensitivity that would attach to it makes it almost too fearsome to consider, much less undertake. But it's still the kind of thing that would be necessary if you're really going to afford equitable protection to the holders of lexemic, to use the fancy term, names in all of the languages that are figuring in this discussion.
So, Kerry, what you're talking about there would be a very intricate task then if we came up with a list of controversial names, maybe even geographical names, and then tried to reserve all of the comparable ones in various scripts.
I'm not suggesting that this is doable.
I'm sorry, Kerry. Go ahead.
I'm not suggesting that this is doable, but again, it is the extreme at the other end of some continuum, to use Rahm's term, that you have to find some comfortable position on.
Yeah, you'd have to catch all the synonyms, too.
Just to clarify, I'd want to be careful about using comparable as a term, Chuck, because I don't think it's a precisely defined term. In this area, the more precision you have, the better it's going to be. And I would, as a working group, especially with an internationalization and multilingualization perspective, the socio-cultural component is going to be inescapable when you're looking at reserved names. And one argument, just to play the other side of this, one argument that I have heard some folks use, which I'm actually a little sympathetic to, is COLOR and COLOUR are considered two separate domain names in the, not at the top level, but at the second level. And therefore, a case could be made that should there be something similar at the top level of the domain name system, similar distinctions ought to be made. While I'm a little sympathetic to it, my concern has to do with the confusion that I believe will inevitably occur between somebody not knowing COLOR and COLOUR as being two completely different terms, because the COLOR differentiation is, technically speaking, and to a computer and from a Unicode and a code point perspective, they are two completely separate terms, but to a lay person, they are exactly the same thing. And I think you will find that exact same issue will hit you much more frequently in the IDN area.
Yeah, good point. Now, let's go back to the question I asked. So, in cases, and we'll, as we go through the questions today, we'll decide which cases may apply, but in cases where we do decide to recommend a reservation of a term in its IDN script equivalence, should we reserve both should we show the reservation list both in A form and U form, like a recommendation that Tina made for in some of the language with regard to the tag names. You follow me? In other words, if we're going to have a reserved name list, let's say we decide to reserve web. Obviously, we're not going to do that. But let's say we decide to reserve the term web, and we decide that it should also be reserved in various IDN versions. Should our list of reserved names then show the ASCII compatible form of web in various scripts, as well as the Unicode or local form?
Can I comment on that?
Sure, Kerry.
Okay, there's two comments. First, you probably should tighten up your terminology. Use the term Unicode form. The local display form may not be in Unicode, and it is completely external to the IDN process. So we enter the IDN realm once we've turned a local representation of a character that the user has typed into its Unicode code point. I mean, graphically, they'll be the same thing, but in the internal representation, they'll be different. And in fact, there are some conversion issues there. It's not necessarily, it will not invariably be as smooth as I say. But nonetheless, we're talking about the Unicode representation of an IDN, that's what a user expects to see on the screen, and then we're talking about the ASCII-compatible equivalent of it, which is what's actually stored in the DNS, and these things are absolutely equivalent to each other, but if you wish to communicate a name in some medium that ensures that the recipient of that communication will know what is being referred to, then I would suggest that you want to have both forms of the label there.
Good. Yeah, and that's consistent with what Tina said, and that's the question. You concur with that, Ram?
I concur with that with one amendment, which is to not say both versions, but instead to say all versions, because
both representations of the name. It's one name represented in two forms.
I'm not sure I understood your comment, Ram. What do you mean all versions? So when we're creating this list of IDN reserve names, what I understood Kerry to say in answer to the question was, yes, we should show the A form and the U form. And you said all forms.
The U form is a third form based upon what Kerry just said.
So an IDN can be expressed in two ways, either as an XN dash dash sequence of ASCII characters, or as a Unicode string. And since we've decided that we're only talking about the Unicode flavor of IDN, the question is there any need to communicate both of these? And I think everybody's in agreement that there are.
Yes, okay. And so, Ram, back to your addition there. Could you clarify what you meant by show all forms?
Actually, Kerry clarified it in immediately after my statement, which is, both forms of a given name. So in other words, what I was getting at was a name represented a certain way in the ASCII form, its equivalent in the Unicode form should be also communicated as a pair. But I was saying really the other semantic meaning I was implying was that name, if possible, is also represented in other ASCII forms, and in each ASCII form that it is represented, its equivalent Unicode form should also go along.
Okay. All right. Very good. And the ASCII form would be clear from the existing reserve names list, or in the case of if some are added to that, some new ones. Okay, I think that makes sense. Now, I want to make sure that
people in the working group...
Yes, Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought I understood, and I've gotten confused.
So when you say equivalent, not two questions. When you say equivalent ASCII forms, are you talking about synonyms? And then the other question I have, I thought there were actually three representations being talked about. The A, the U, and what it appears like on a screen to the native viewer. And then
well,
the appearance on the screen and the U were not necessarily the same.
Well, in my view, the appearance on the screen and the U must have a one-to-one correlation because the U is what is going to be supported. So let me give you an example. In India, they use, for Hindi, they use the ISCII script, which is not recognized in Unicode and therefore does not have an equivalent representation. On a screen in India, you may be able to see a character represented using ISCII, but that is ISCII, and we don't care about that. We only care about the Unicode representation of that script.
Okay, so the Unicode representation is still one that one could look at for visual confusability.
If you want to talk about confusability, the local representation, as Ram is describing it, and the Unicode representation are the ones that are going to be spitting images of each other,
okay,
but in their internal representation, they're not the same thing.
Right.
I think that answers your question, right, Aubrey?
Yes, that answered my question. So it is only the two forms.
So it is only the two forms, and... what was your first part of your question,
Aubrey? When you were talking about other ASCII representations, so in other words, you have the, and I didn't quite understand what that meant. Was that synonyms for the word in an ASCII, or was that, because I assumed that there was only one ACE representation for you. Are there several?
Let me try to illustrate. In a hypothetical case, it is possible that some organization has decided that they are applying for a new TLD, and that TLD they apply for it with three equivalent names or forms. So I don't know. I cannot think of an example off the top of my head. But
so
in that case. I don't know. It could be synonyms. It could be something that is constitutionally or legally required, and therefore they may not be exactly synonyms, but they may be considered to be equivalent. And really what I was saying was I don't know enough geopolitics to comment kind of universally on it, but I do know that the possibility exists that
go ahead.
You may have multiple representations of a given name, even in ASCII.
So in other words, an example might be, and I'm just trying to get my head on fuzz, if one country had several national scripts, and their name for the country would have a different name, would have a different U name in each of those three scripts, then you would also need the three ACES equivalents, the three A name equivalents of those names.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example, Aubrey.
Okay, thanks. Now I'm
clear. That's good. Good questions, Aubrey. And I want to make a suggestion. I know that a lot of you are going to be a little bit overwhelmed by the IDN discussion. Hang in there. We're going to get, when we get to the specific reserve name categories shortly, I think some of this will become more clear. And keep in mind that you can always get clarification after this meeting as well. What I want to do next is go to the second general questions, and then we'll get to the specific categories. Are there any guidelines that we could follow regarding when to reserve IDN versions of ASCII reserve names and when it doesn't make sense? For example, does it make sense to reserve IDN versions of abbreviations and acronyms? As you know, we have a lot of those. Or would that have to be handled on a case-by-case basis depending on the script?
Terry, let me lead with an answer, and why don't you jump in?
My
suggestion is that in these cases, you are best referring to a local authority, a language authority, or some sort of a constitutional body I think it's a slippery slope to try and make global policy for what is effectively a local issue. Again, just to give an example, .org in India, one of the scripts that is used popularly in India is called Tamil, T-A-M-I-L. And in that script, ORG is spelled out exactly as ORG in the local language. However, COM is not spelled out as COM. And we would not know that unless we went and talked to a local language authority there.
Good. Okay. Carrie, would you like to add anything there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the thing that I imagine has been discussed at significant length in this group is that domain names, despite the fact that they're called names, aren't supposed to be names. They have certain coincidental word-like and name-like properties, but they're only supposed to be mnemonically convenient alphanumeric sequences that provide some convenience to human users. And when we end up in a situation where we're talking about what can either be read as meaningless alphanumeric strings or as some form of truncated or clipped or abbreviated or acronym version of something that has clear meaning and may even be regarded by somebody as their intellectual property, you're just courting an unendable discussion about what needs to be covered and what doesn't need to be covered. No matter what you do, there's always going to be something that's on the outside that should be on the inside and vice versa. So the essence of the DNS is extraordinarily non-amenable to the kinds of things we're talking about right now, including the IDN stuff.
Terry, Chuck, this is Ram. My formulation would be, in all cases, the expansion of abbreviations or the reservations of abbreviations should be referred to local language authorities or local or appropriately selected local expertise unless clear exceptions exist. So something that generally sweeps this particular issue to the local people, I think, is the right thing to do. And if you really want to have a caveat, put one caveat that says, unless there is a clearly established exception.
Okay. Good. Let's move on then to the specific categories so that the various subgroups of our total working group can get some direction in terms of their recommendations that they need to consider. And as you already know, we're looking at top level, we're looking at second level, which is for the most second level is covered in ASCII, but we need to decide whether we recommend that second level reservations should include the A and U forms of various names as well. And then, of course, there's a few cases where third level will apply. So let's start off with the first category, which is labels reserved at all levels, and there are two categories of names there. The first category is ICANN-related names, and those are ASO, GNSO, ICANN, InterNIC, and CCNSO. Now, there's four older agreements, as Carrie well knows, that still have DNSO and PSO. We don't need to focus on those. But for this category of names, what do you two recommend with regard to IDN? Can versions of these even be represented in IDNs in some scripts? If so, should they be reserved? What is your thinking on that?
Do you want to tell him or should I?
I'm happy to take a swing at it, Carrie. I think this is quite an unachievable task for any group to do, much less a volunteer group to do. Unless there is some clear description of each of these expansions in the local language that is then abbreviated, I think you have a real problem, because GNSO represented in French may have nothing to do with the actual name of the organization converted in French. So my recommendation is to not bother reserving these, but instead to to see if there would be an equivalent and to reserve them at that time. It's a little controversial recommendation, but it seems meaningless to reserve GNSO when GNSO means nothing.
There is, I think, probably a palpable way to avoid some of the intricacy in this, and that is there are literal sequences that appear in URLs all the time that are regarded as protocol elements. HTTP, for example, probably ought not to be a candidate for representation in other scripts. It can easily enough be done without, in fact, in many applications contexts. But nonetheless, if you regard these YANA ICANN-specific sequences more as protocol elements than as what I suppose would have to be called initialisms. I mean, that's what they are in that frame of reference. You'll be kind of safe. GNSO is a concept in the internet sphere of things, and it is not an English term. It's not translatable into something else. The GNSO designates something, it's not a word. It's a protocol element.
I can live with
element.
That, Carrie.
Yeah.
I can certainly live with that. I think that provides an elegant way out of the controversy here. If you look at GNSO, ICANN, etc., merely as initialisms, and do away with any semantic representation.
Okay. That's helpful.
I'm sorry, it's Mike Rubin. I'm not really clear on what that meant.
That means that ICANN, Mike, this is Ram, ICANN is stripped of meaning. And it's what we merely say is ICANN is an important term and therefore shall be reserved.
ICANN is a token, an alphanumeric, well, an alpha token.
How about trademark? Does that work? I mean, that's
if you want to move this in the direction of being insolubly complex, sure. If you want to reduce layers of complexity, probably not.
Carrie, Ram, I have Chuck, I have a question for either Ram or Carrie.
Go ahead.
And this is Mike Blage, if I could get in the queue after
Okay,
Ram.
All right. I better make a list, huh?
This is Tim. I just want to make sure you knew I joined the call.
Well, thank you, Tim.
Okay. It's Marilyn, and thank you so much. This has been very helpful, but I have a follow-on question to the reference to HTTP, HTML, both of which are a string of letters which have particular relevance in email routing, or addressing, I guess I should say. Would you go back to that example and talk a little bit more about that? Because it sounds like what you were saying is, and I like the phrase token, Carrie, it's sort of, this is a string of letters. It has meaning in because of its technical use, or I guess that would be the right phrase?
Yeah.
So although HTML has an actual expansion, it has come to mean something more than that, and therefore HTML in its form, as it is, just as it stands, will be reserved in other areas, regardless of how it's converted into French or converted into Arabic.
Now, hold on a second there, Ram. I want to make sure we're clear on what you just said. So HTML should be reserved. We reserve it today in ASCII. If I understood you correctly, and I may not have, you're saying that there's no need to reserve it at IDN versions of it, whatever those might be.
That's not what I thought he said at all, so I'm glad you asked.
That's why I asked, because I want to make sure.
Actually, what I'm saying is that the IDN version of HTML, you're going to get incredibly caught up in what is the IDN version, what is the appropriate translation. And in many languages around the world, a technical glossary is yet to be compiled that has an equivalent of HTTP or HTML, as an example, or .com as an example. So in those cases, what we're saying is HTML, for instance, what we're saying is just take HTML and consider it just initialism, do not bother about what it actually means, but just say HTML is an important term and therefore is reserved as it exists. It's reserved in the local languages. Kerry, do you want to add?
Hold on just a second, Kerry, but Ram, you said reserved in the local languages. What did you mean by that? HTML in its ASCII form is reserved?
Yes.
But not any, because it's too complicated to get the IDN versions, right?
Exactly. It's an almost impossible job to get all the IDN versions of HTML in all the languages of the world.
I think as a general principle, again, trying to reduce the complexity of this, if you would need to invent a sequence of non-ASCII characters to represent something that is well-known in its ASCII form, who are you serving? If you would have to guess what the Arabic sequence that's equivalent to HTML is, nobody is likely to thank you. If, however, some community does come forward and say, in fact, in our linguistic frame of reference, there are transliterated equivalents to these things, and we'd appreciate your placing them on the list, that would be quite different. But have you been contacted by any such community? I mean, to the best of my knowledge, why don't I do it in my own experience? The International Council of Museums, ICOM, has 140 national committees using all sorts of scripts and languages, and with two exceptions of which I'm aware, every single one of them uses the ICOM acronym in its Latinate form.
Okay.
This is Edmund. May I offer a suggestion? I guess.
Hold on, Edmund. I'll add you to the queue, okay? And let me go. Marilyn, now, did your question get answered? Marilyn?
We can't possibly have overwhelmed her. That doesn't happen.
She's probably speaking into a muted phone.
Yeah, probably. Well, let's go back to Mike. I want to go back to Mike Rodenbaugh. Did your question get answered?
I think so. I mean, I think the answer was we're trying to find an elegant and simple solution, a la the one we've been employing forever. But yeah, I think it's
okay. And then now, Mike Pelage, I think you were next.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chuck. Mike Pelage here. I just wanted to, I guess, share the concerns that I thought I heard both Carrie and Rom articulating about the potential of expanding reservations, if you will, outside of tokens or string identifiers. You know, this is something that I think I've tried to articulate not within the context of IDNs, but just the, if you will, the existing ASCII reservation of these strings and designations within the existing TLDs. And the one thing I would point out to Mike, where you and I can may, in fact, Mike Rodenbaugh, where I can and you may be similarly situated, is in that list of words there, the ASO, ICANN, IANA, ICANN does actually have trademark registrations for ICANN and IANA. So, you know, again, I'm not one of the reasons that I've been very concerned about ICANN/IANA seeking this reservation is I don't want them to, if you will, be creating sui generis rights or protections that other parties might not be entitled to. So I guess that's, if you will, my concerns. And I think Rom and Carrie were am I saying what you had said, that there is danger if we begin to extend this outside of just technical protocols to potentially marks or trademarks, trade names, and other things?
Yeah, I guess I would say that if you identify something as initials or as a combination of characters that is important, stated as such, and then hold on to them and reserve them, don't try to translate them, because I think inevitably you'll get into trouble.
And actually, Ron, then that's kind of what I was trying to get at, and obviously didn't do a very good job up in that general question. Are there some guidelines that we could follow? And I think you just gave one, and that is don't try to translate acronyms or abbreviations that have very specific meaning in a technical context or whatever.
Well, if you wanted to do that, and I'm suggesting quite the opposite, you do not want to do that, but if you wanted to, what you would need to do is translate the extensive thing. It would be the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers said in some other language. And then a local truncation of that that corresponds to initialism or acronym in the Anglophone frame of reference. I mean, it's grossly inappropriate to make the assumption that the notion of abbreviation as we're using it is globally applicable. It's not.
Right.
So, again, there is a name that is abbreviated, truncated, clipped, whatever. There are whole bunches of ways of doing this. If approached from the Anglophone perspective, and what we would need to do is translate the extensive term, and then figure out what the local equivalent to our notion of acronymization might be. But the thing we'd also need to do is ask that local community if they themselves use the English derivative token for this, or if they have some local abbreviated form. And only in the presence of explicit such knowledge do you guys have a real problem. And I think you're assuming that this will be a frequent case, and I'm suggesting that it will be an infrequent one.
Yes, thank you. You know, you guys have been very helpful on this. I think it gives us the direction we need here. Edmund, you wanted to add something.
Oh, I was just going to give a sort of example outside of the use of sort of English acronyms. For example, FIFA is one example where the FIFA doesn't correspond to an English sort of name, but a French one, I believe, or probably French, but at least it's not English, and it's actually, even in the English, that we would use FIFA, and that sort of would make sense for like acronyms like ICANN and IANA.
Okay. All right, so hopefully we're clear enough on this. Timothy Denton, you obviously are the lead on this particular category. Are you okay on what you've heard so far?
Yes and no. Yes, I get the sense that it was in Mohan's words, unless there was a clear description in the local languages, you'd be inviting a very great deal of trouble to do this, and the overall impression I get, and forgive me if I'm not heard it correctly, is that you shouldn't bother reserving until you find local equivalents, and this is a rather immense task. So I'm sorry, that's my high-level takeaway. If I've failed to get some detail, I confess I have. But
no, I think you have, and I'd be glad to assist on this. I'm sure both Rom and Carrie, if you need more clarification, would be able to provide it via email. I want to move on. And Marilyn, I'm going to apologize right now. We're not going to get to single and character names before you have to leave. I apologize for that, but a way of avoiding it, I don't think.
Chuck, this is Aubrey. Can I?
I agree. Thanks, Chuck.
Can I put in one footnote on the one we just left, and it'll be quick?
Sure.
Some organizations, and I don't know how many of these this will apply to, formally list their names in both a English and, for example, a French abbreviation. Not that we have the UN on there, but so we probably should make a footnote that one has to be careful, and if they list themselves under two abbreviations, then we may need to take that into account.
Yeah, and I think one of the ways we're going to... I think it was Rom, it could have been Carrie, that made the suggestion that, if there may be some cases where a local community communicates with ICANN, with the GNS or whatever, and as we go, there could be exceptions made and reservations of some IDN things, if it's really applicable, but those should be done as on an exception basis, it sounds like, instead of trying to do this on a general basis, which would be probably impossible. Okay, let's go on then to the IANA-related names, and that's AFRNIC, APNIC, ARIN, example, TTLD servers, IAB, IANA, IANA servers, IESG, ITF, IRTF, ISTF, LACNIC, LATNIC, RFC editor, RIPE, and root servers. Now, one of those at least is quite different than the rest. based on our previous discussion, and that is example. So let's talk about that one first and see what you recommend in that regard, Carrie and Ron.
Let me just provide a very brief response. In the cases of the initials, the prior guideline that we suggested will hold. In the case of the word that has semantic meaning in and of itself, example, I think it is reasonable to expect that that word will be similarly used in other TMDs and in other representations. If I recall right, one of the reasons why example was originally reserved was because it was used as illustrations of who is, etc., and it's probably worthwhile to make that really a policy and to say that that word example shall be what continues to go forward as a name used for illustrative purposes, for example, in listing who is data.
And it could be used, I think it's also one of the reasons in the RFCs was also that it was, I think, used for testing and so forth, so you have something that you can use. And so what you're suggesting is that it probably would be good to recommend that the U and A versions of example and other scripts be reserved.
Other languages in this case. This is one of the rare circumstances where we do need to talk about language. If you have some need to have looked in a dictionary, an authoritative dictionary of every language that's ever going to figure in the IDN discussion, here's the word to look up.
Yeah, good. Okay, and then now, Ram, I think you said then that all of the others, which are for the most part acronyms, I guess GTLD servers and RFC editor and root servers and IANA servers are a little bit different, but the discussion we just had would apply to those other ones. Is that correct?
That's correct. And even things like RFC editor and IANA server root server, I would suggest that you treat them as initialisms or acronyms.
There's another little detail to this that actually might be interesting to discuss with, well, actually Ron probably can speak about it authoritatively. The RFCs are deliberately kept free of 8-bit characters. And for us to take any terms that are a part of the vocabulary in which the RFC formalism is declared and decide that we're going to 8-bitify them, that might be another situation where we can't expect to be thanked.
Yeah, okay.
I agree. I think swift punishment will follow.
Ram, I would like to just you to clarify what you mean by when, say, you speak of things like RFC editor to treat them as acronyms. Can you unpack that concept for me?
What I'm saying is, in the prior discussion, we had discussed that a number of terms, for example, ICANN, be treated as an initialism and not expanded into its English form and then converted to a local language form and then reinitialize it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. So just keep it as right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay. Good. That was. Any other questions or comments on that category? Okay. Let's move on to additional second level reservations, and let's talk about all single character labels. Which one of the two of you would like to start off on that one?
Can I start by asking a question simply?
Sure.
John Clenson prepared a rather lengthy discussion of key issues that attach to the use of single character labels on both the top and the second level that Liz Williams posted to the GNSO Council list, which is a public one, in the middle of January. Have you taken note of that? Or
We have, Karen.
Okay.
But for this discussion, I don't really want to go into the issues there. I'd really like to focus on, you know, if single character labels are reserved, as they are today, in ASCII, regardless of the level that they're at, okay, should any IDN versions of single characters be reserved as well? Does that even make sense?
If we are talking about invariable parallel representation of the U and the A labels, Well, which counts as the single character? Which one do you count?
Yeah, well, I understand. Why don't you explain that to the rest
Harry,
of the
Harry, I would count to the normal user out there, if they looked at a single character in their local language, they would think of that as a single character, and they wouldn't have the foggiest idea that it translates into XN dash dash something or the other. So to me, that would I view that from the lens of a lay person, the average internet user. A single character is exactly what it looks like to the human eye. I would like to perhaps ask Chuck for a clarification. When you say single character, that concept doesn't exactly translate across all of the world's languages. So I'm wondering whether, in fact, what we are talking about is the alphabet that is used to represent a given language, each individual alphabet be reserved, and numerals be reserved. Is that what you're really driving at?
Yes. And you just made a very important point in that, you know, the statement that single character doesn't translate in all languages. So could I conclude from that then that it doesn't really make sense in those languages to reserve a whatever might be a single character? And then my follow-up question would be, okay, in the languages where single character does have meaning, should, for example, if we reserve the letter W, okay, should the corresponding character in other languages be reserved as well?
You are making an assumption about global transliteratability that also has no...
I understand.
Can I just make a little bit contextual statement on that, Chuck? I mean, just going back to the original reason, you know, why these single letters were reserved in the first place was purportedly for extensibility of the namespace. So I'm just
curious, go ahead.
IBM context, if that translates over to the IBM context. It does seem to me it does not, because obviously in the DNS, the CUNY code string is much longer than a single character to render the Unicode single character.
But I think the problem is that while in the DNS, the CUNY code is, this is Ram, while the CUNY code is longer, to the user of that term, they don't see it. We cannot expect them to see it in CUNY code. We can't expect them to see it as a single character.
That's correct, and that's what I was going to say, Ram. So Mike, what would happen is, let's just use Y, okay, of interest to you, okay. You're right, in other scripts that it would not look like a single character, but it's certainly not in the DNS, but when it's at the application level, it would. Did that make sense?
At the application level or at the visual level to the user?
Well, I think we're talking the same thing there.
Well, I mean, again, I think the reasons for reserving them are technical reasons due to interface with applications.
Okay, hold on a second. I don't want to talk about whether we should reserve them or not.
I agree.
That's not the subject here. The subject here is, if it's decided to reserve them, what actions, if any, should we take with regard to IDNs? And that's what we're trying to get a handle on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to what we were talking about, Ram and Kerry, can you comment a little bit further on this? Are we going down a path that's in some cases doable, in other cases not, like the languages that single character doesn't have any meaning?
Well, let me ask a counter question here. Do you think you can be selective here without running yourself vulnerable to a charge of cultural bias, that we're doing something for the languages that we understand but not for the others, or we've decided to do something that we realize can't be done in all languages? So do things on behalf of the global community that will serve that community. But if you end up being selective in a way that can be perceived as random or discriminatory, you might want to think twice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay. Ram, you want to add anything?
Chuck, this is Tim, if I could get in the queue.
Go ahead,
question.
Tim.
Yeah, I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, Aubrey, I've got you down, so Tim's first. Anybody else?
Sophia.
Okay, Sophia.
I have my statement of interest ready.
Thank you.
Yes.
You submitted it, I take it?
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Okay, Tim, go ahead.
Well, I'm just having trouble understanding why the length of the label makes more of an issue. I mean, if we're saying, you know, that a label at the second level can be 1 to X number of characters, and then these other reservations, you know, the fact that these other reservations apply, why we're singling out single-letter names. I mean, even two-letter. I mean, two-letter, you know, could end up being completely reserved just simply because of the ISO, 3166. But just in a general sense, you know, a label can be 1 to X number of characters, but these reservations apply. So why a single character poses more of an issue?
Can I describe a case that I don't think is figured in the discussion thus far that may provide some perspective on all of this?
Please do, Carrie.
Okay, it's actually, I would regard it as a genuine security issue. And that is, we are talking about situations where users have to be protected from being deliberately confused, using as one of the protected devices, ensuring that scripts are not mixed in a single label. There are some writing systems, some languages do use multiple scripts, and they need to be accommodated. But in any situation where the normal writing practice that's applied to a language doesn't require the use of more than one script, we've got guidelines we're going to try to bake into the protocols, an absolute constraint that you can only have one script in a label. If all you have is one character in a label, that protection evaporates. And there are numerous scripts that contain characters that look like O's. There are numerous scripts that contain characters that look like L's. These things have already been registered. So for somebody to acquire one of the 26 ASCII single-letter STLDs would put them in a situation of as great a vulnerability for this kind of abuse as can be conceived.
Thank you, Kerry.
It's not a matter of that somebody who acquires it in ASCII will be the abuser, which I think is
it would be the automatic abusee. There are half a dozen things that look like O's in .com and goodness knows how many in CC.
So I think you're saying that if O or .o was registered, then the owner of .o's users would be confused by the existing O similarities that have already been registered as IDNs?
They would be immediately vulnerable. If someone who already has those other O's is just waiting for the real O to become available, then whoever acquires the real O will be heir to exactly the kinds of things that we're breaking our backs trying to protect users otherwise from. So there's something paradoxical about, on the one hand, saying one script, one label, and also saying, why can't we have single character strength?
And Chuck, may I add to this?
Please, Ram, go ahead.
In some languages, just taking the example of O, there is no lowercase representation of it, but there is an uppercase representation of it, and they, to the normal user, they look different, but they are actually the same, and you would run into that issue as well.
Now,
don't we
Chuck,
have that
can I
issue
get
now? Just Tim with a follow-up. Yes. Don't we have that issue now with certain scripts where, you know, there are several, I mean, not just one or two, but, you know, perhaps 90% of the script has characters that are that look the same as characters in another script.
Yes, and that's why the IDN guidelines that were revised last year recommend against script mixing to resolve precisely that issue.
But you could create one just as easily without script mixing as you could for a single letter.
No, because in the DNS, lowercase and uppercase are the same.
Okay, so if I have OOO.com in ASCII, I'm not immediately at risk of OOO it got something in some IDN.
I don't think I understand the question. The way I'm looking at it is, this is Ram, the way I'm looking at it is OOO written, say, in the Latin script, you would want to make sure that OOO in Cyrillic, as an example, or in some other script where it looks equivalent, that equivalent is actually blocked from registration or is tied to this registration because they look visually confusing. And I don't understand how that correlates to uppercase or lowercase, which was really my clarification.
Now, one thing, too, I want to remind everybody that the new GTLD group working on the TDP is dealing with the issue of confusingly similar. So it's not our task to deal with that in this. It's okay that it comes up, okay? But keep in mind that that's not part of our work task in terms of dealing with confusingly similar. It's a very important issue and a tough one. Okay, but right now we need to be able to refine our recommendations with regard to reserve names, and we don't need to go down that path. Tim, are you okay? You still
come? Not entirely, but I think this is probably as far as I can get.
Yeah, maybe we can talk more about offline, and you can also talk to these guys, via email or whatever. Aubrey, I think you were, and somebody else wanted in the queue. Who was that?
I left that.
Okay, Alistair. Aubrey's next, then Sophia, and then Alistair.
Okay, hi. Thanks. I'm glad you brought up about the confusability rules sort of trumping all this and making some of the stuff that came up just recently not as much an issue. One of the things that I was thinking of is that in terms of what Carrie had said about the prejudice of in some things we've got an alphabet and therefore we say you can't use it, and in the other ones, is that you probably could define it as simply anything that can be defined with a single representation. In other words, there are the code points, and there are those, and so anything that can be defined as a single code point, whether it is a letter from an alphabet or it is a specific symbol of some sort from a picture, a pictorially represented language, they would be equivalent at that translated level. So if you wanted to reserve those, now I'm not actually in favor of reserving them, but I just wanted to point out that I think technically one could do it if one did it based upon the code point. On the other thing of there being again a confusion between something that looks like O in a different script and O in ASCII, again then I think we're falling in the confusability issue, and once one of them has it, then the next IDN, I mean, the XTLD wouldn't be able to get it because something that looked like that already had it, and that rule would apply there.
And I want to come back to that one, but before I do, Ram or Kara, do you want to comment on the single code point reservation issue?
This is Ram. I would like to comment on it very quickly. I was cringing when I heard it because I think it works well in certain languages, but in other languages it's actually impossible to represent even a given alphabet, a single letter of the alphabet, with only one code point.
And so in that case, I think we would have a problem. So I think that is over-constraining. That definition over-constrains the issue, and it kind of assumes that we actually have a global expertise in many languages. I know for sure that I'm ignorant about most languages in the world.
Okay. Thank you. Now, by the way, and Avery, I want to come back to your second point now and go back to Carrie's statement about cultural bias. Now, I apologize. Some of you aren't going to like what I'm going to say next, and I'm not advocating one position or another, but I think it's an issue that we need to consider. If, for example, the requirement for reserving single character labels was removed and opened up, and we had a new round of GTLDs for ASCII before IDN, I think we would be creating some cultural bias. So in other words, I think, and the working group can talk about this later, but I think if, for example, there was not a reservation for single character names in an ASCII round, if the ASCII round happened before IDNs were ready, then we would be giving the advantage to those in the ASCII world over those in the IDN world, and I suspect that would be problematic.
Well, Chuck, isn't that exactly what we're doing regardless of the number of characters in the TLD?
Right.
I suppose that's an interesting point. Suppose that's true, yes.
You gotta like those American lawyers.
Yeah.
Chuck, this is Tim.
My question is
that.
Tim, were you trying to get in the queue again?
I think Alistair has something.
Yeah, we're going to. Aubrey, you're done, right? Sophia was next. Tim, did you want back in the queue? Or
Yes, please, back in the queue.
Okay, Sophia.
Yes, Chuck. I guess I'm not sure if I can pose my own opinion because I'm a liaison to the group.
Feel free.
Is it free? Okay, good. We're clarifying that. The only thing I wanted to perhaps caution is on the single character reservations, and I think there are two voices here, but what I see is that it's going to get real complex on the translations again, and I was just wondering if we can, if we should stick to a uniform policy for both the single character and listen to the inputs from the, or leave the visually confusability issue, which is one of the issues here in the single character as well, to the group that are working on it.
That's what I was suggesting, Sophia.
Yeah, but having a uniform policy, for both the single character and the other one. So then we would avoid trying to dissect every reserved name for every character if we don't apply a uniform policy.
What kind of a uniform policy are you thinking of? I'm not exactly following you.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is for all six, we're coming up to the single characters, if we're going to reserve the old, and then translate it into the different scripts, we don't know the implication of that. So we're struggling with that. And then the other policy we're trying to have is on names that are, more than single characters, right? So the uniform policy being, why don't we have the same policy on both?
On single characters and other names?
Yeah. I mean, why are we treating them differently when it comes to the, the ID?
Well, here's one reason, okay? Single characters are now reserved.
Right.
Multiple character names in general are not. So that's one reason why the primary reason we're focusing on those.
Yeah, but the implication is the same, right, in terms of translations. That's what we're saying. The implication is the same given that it's it's reserved or not.
Now, I'm not sure that I agree with that. Rom or Terry, you want to comment on it? Are the implications the same for single characters as they are for multiple character names?
To the extent that we're talking about the mixed script concept that is applicable when there are more than one character. It is by definition not applicable when there is only one character, and I think it's a very important principle. So at least on that level, there's a clear distinction.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but technically, right, Kerry, not...
No, in terms of user vulnerability. Technically, on the absolute technical level, all labels in the DNS are stored in their ASCII form, and a single displayed Unicode character is a minimum of 6 ASCII characters in its encoded form. So on an absolute technical level, this is a non-issue. If the issue is protecting the users of the Internet from egregious abuse that can be avoided, then we probably should spend some more time talking about it.
Yeah, what I'm saying, it's not that we're not talking about it. How is this one different from the non-reserved one?
If what you mean that there should be two sets of policies depending on the extent to which a name is reserved, I agree with you. No. I mean, we're talking about basic principles of what ought to appear in the namespace, regardless of what any given string that might appear in the namespace might have for additional attributes.
So do you agree that, the implication is the same, therefore we should stick to the similar policy in terms of the outcome?
Is what you're suggesting, Sophia, that since there aren't reserved names for multiple characters, that there shouldn't be for single characters? That would be the same policy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. I follow you. Okay.
Okay, and the other one I was trying to say is the guideline. I think, Chuck, you said that developing the guideline for the reserved names in general. I think this would be a good idea, even for the whole discussion that we would have. Let's take that guideline for all reserved names and run it by the IDN working group that we're having every week, and see everybody's opinion and come back to you and suggest an input of the guidelines that could be, because most of us are saying we don't have that the linguistic implications in here. So it would be a good idea to develop a guideline, in my opinion, like you suggested early for the reserved names.
And of course, that's one of the reasons why we have the experts on. But it's my intent to ask you and Ron both to communicate. In fact, I hope you will communicate even the discussions we're having today to the IDN working group. Unfortunately, both working groups are expected to finish their tasks before Lisbon, which means there's going to be very little window in, and probably not time for feedback to be incorporated in our final report. That doesn't mean that feedback can't be provided to the GNSO Council as it takes action on the reports. But yeah, absolutely. That's fine. In fact, that's what I'm planning.
Yeah, just a guideline, a formal one, put on paper. I think that would be help. That would help you. And
well, what we'll present them is our final report, and in particular, ask them to take a look at the recommendations with regard as they relate to IDN.
Okay.
Okay.
No problem. Thanks.
Alistair.
Thanks, Jack. I have a question, or perhaps a comment. It might be both. That sort of is slightly in reverse of the point you made earlier about the sort of concerns about cultural imperialism of ASCII versus other character types. My understanding is that in some scripts, a single character is actually a word, and the script I can think of is Chinese characters. If you think of something like Beijing, that's two characters, so you could potentially have a single character bay, where it actually might make sense to have that as a TLD. I mean, thus, my understanding is that means north. So I guess the question in my mind is, well, if you're going to have a policy for all single characters, it may actually not make sense when it comes to IDNs. So, for example, if we continue with the policy on reservation of single characters for ASCII, that may actually not make sense for some IDN scripts. for some language group, sorry, as opposed to IDN.
Yeah, and I think that's what Ron and Kerry were saying, correct?
Well, what about the English words A and I?
True. So, it seems to me there's not a simple answer, in short.
Let me make sure what the question is.
Well, the question is, does it make sense if we say there are technical reasons to reserve single characters in ASCII? It seems to me that that may not automatically flow through to IDN. So it may actually be acceptable to have single character labels in IDN.
Yeah, and let's not get into whether we believe there are technical reasons, but with that, Kerry or Ron, do you want to respond to that? Forgetting the issue of whether or not there are technical reasons for reserving them. I mean, is it possible that that if there is some reason for not doing them in single ASCII characters, that it may not be the same case in IDN versions?
It's kind of a hard question to answer. Yes, there are things that we Anglophones would regard as single characters on a screen that to someone whom that means something would not be perceived as a single character, and it might also require several Unicode code points for its representation. So here we actually do get into some semantic fun and games in defining what a single character is. But can I ask yet another question that's intended, hopefully, to reduce the complexity of this discussion? And that's, does anyone on this call actually believe that we can expect to see single character TLD labels, whatever the definition is?
Yes. Well, I think it's quite possible.
I think it's possible, yes.
Okay, then we do have to thrash through all of this stuff. And we haven't seen them on the second level, at least sanctioned yet. So,
well, they've been out there as IDNs at the second level.
I regard the second level manifestation of single display characters is a non-issue. I mean, the second level main space is littered with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are still formal constraints on their appearance in the ASCII realm. This is actually one of the situations where the ASCII world certainly is not the favored one.
Now, Kerry, if I can translate what you just said, I think you're saying that the single character issue is much simpler on the second level than it is on the top level. Is that correct?
I tend to harbor the simplistic belief that the further away from the root you get, the more breathing space you have.
Okay. Good. No, I just want to make sure I interpret it correctly. I think that's helpful information. Okay. Alistair, I don't know if that answered your question or help.
Sort of does. Thank you. No, okay. I think that's fine for now. Thanks,
Chuck. Okay. Tim, you wanted to get back in the queue?
Edmund.
Yeah, Chuck, but I think the conversation that just took place that kind of answered my question or concern. I just wanted to clarify that we weren't assuming that the arguments that we've been discussing or the concerns that we've been discussing about single character at the top level necessarily meant the same policy would need to apply at the second level.
Yeah, and
that's been answered.
Yeah, I think that was a real good point to clarify. Okay, Edmund.
One thing about reserved names and the top level, it doesn't preclude people from, applying for a single letter TLD, even if we say it's reserved. They just have to justify it, right? Is that the correct understanding, or are we saying once it's reserved, it's never, it's completely, I can't submit the application and it won't be considered at all?
If the council would recommend and the board would adopt a policy with regard to new introduction of new TLDs that excluded single character top level domains, then somebody could apply, I suppose, if they wanted to spend the money, but they'd be thrown out very quickly.
But we're talking about reserved names in that sense, or are we about, you know, if it's reserved, if you have to justify it?
Keep in mind that reserved names at the top level kind of has a little different meaning, in the sense that what we're really saying is these names are not allowed for top-level domains right now. That doesn't mean it couldn't change in the future, but that's a little bit different than saying .asia can't register second level names that are single character, or any TLD for that matter.
No, in a sense. So we are talking about almost like prohibiting it in the top level.
Yeah.
I guess in that case, then it does not make sense to prohibit it in for IDN then. But if it is the case where with a reserve you need additional justification, then I would say, you know, it's good to extend this policy to IDN.
Extend what policy?
Little character.
To have the reservation at the top level, you mean, of single characters?
Right.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, let's move on, because we're quickly running out of time, and we need to get through this. Now, I'm going to try and simplify this next one, and I want to see if Carrie and Rom agree with me. For two-character labels, and folks, we're not going to get into CCTLD's issues in this call, but it seems to me they're abbreviations, and our argument for the IANA and ICANN names applies the same way. Is that a correct conclusion? Gary and Rom.
I'm not 100% sure. I know which direction to answer. Can you state the question once again, please?
Well, okay, Carrie, and I didn't make this very clear. I've moved on to another category of reserved names, and that's the two-character labels. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're not always abbreviations, but I'm in my own question as I do this, but what is your thinking with regard to IDN implications of two-character labels?
Rob?
Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay. To the extent that we're talking about non-ASCII characters, display characters, I think we're okay. The constraint on the two-letter label is that they are in potential conflict with the freedom of the ISO 3166 maintenance agency to add new two-letter codes. And we probably are not in a position where we can override that. But that list is avowedly ASCII and ASCII only. And unless they're willing to open it up for the appearance of Unicode characters, which, as I understand them, it ain't going to happen, I see no reason why two non-ASCII character labels can't be made available.
Well, what if the country code registries, though, end up having their IDN versions of their country code top-level domain? Would that be a problem then?
Well, there's a potential snag here. If what we're talking about is some localized equivalent to the CC label, that's fine. If we're talking about transliterating or translating 3166 codes, then I suspect the 3166 maintenance agency is going to want to have a word in the discussion. So if a CC operator can figure out a reasonable argument for being given a local label designating the thing that the CC abbreviation designates, more power to him, I would have thought.
Okay. Rom? You have anything to add here? Are you still with us? Did we lose Rom? Okay, yeah, I haven't been able to look over at my list because we're moving along here.
I would be quite certain that Ron has an opinion on this, and I wouldn't bet any money that it's going to be the same as mine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get Ron back here. So, Gary, what, I mean, any suggestions about how to proceed with this category regarding IDNs? You're saying that they might be okay to in non-ASCII characters, so we maybe don't need to extend it to non-ASCII names.
Well, let's make it conditional. If my basic assumption is true, that the reason why two-character ASCII labels are restricted is to avoid potential conflict with coming ISO 3166 two-letter codes. If those codes are ASCII and ASCII only, then there is no reason to extend the constraint on the number of characters external to the ASCII realm.
Okay.
And did you notice how many ifs I put in that sentence?
I did.
Okay.
And I couldn't type fast enough, but we're having this recorded. So, anybody in the working group have a question or a comment here? Hopefully, the group that's working on those will at least have something.
Chuck, can I be added to the queue?
You can jump right in, Alistair.
I mean, it seems to me that actually some IDNs, it would actually make sense to allow two-character labels at the top level from a user's point of view. I mean, the example I gave earlier of Beijing would be a good example, I would have thought. That's a two-character term in Chinese. So, and that, as far as I know, doesn't have any 3166 problems.
Yeah.
So my starting presumption would be it should be allowed unless there are those sorts of issues.
Can I comment directly on that, Chuck?
Absolutely.
Okay. One of the things that may be underway is that some CC operators are in fact trying to get the ISO 3166 maintenance agency to consider the addition of two-character designations from non-ASCII scripts. What is that? Is that ever wrong? From other than Latin scripts. And if they do that, if they succeed, then all of a sudden the two-character constraint does extend beyond ASCII.
Well, unless they're the corresponding IDN versions are full country names or something like that.
I mean, I would assume that a country's interest would be in a localized designation of that country according to local custom and practice rather than a pro forma insistence on it being a two-character representation, because that's what 3166 happens to be.
Yeah. So I wonder if this is one that it would be wise to wait on until we have more information.
Can I speak? This is Aubrey.
Go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, I actually tend to be very much in favor of the first thing you suggested, which is that, you know, we treat them as abbreviations and therefore not worry about them outside of ASCII. I don't think there's any way we can project what might happen if ISO decided to extend and come up with another set of designations in other scripts. And if we tried to guess at the number of things that we might have to block off because of what might happen, I think it'd be way too much. So I think that your first notion of it, which is, these are abbreviations, and they're reserved at the two, and beyond that, no.
Okay. Thank you. Moving right along, let's go to second-level reservations for registry operations, which is simply Nick, who is, and www. I think that's done. I mean, that's Carrie, you agree with that? And Glenn, let me know if you see Rom getting back on. I'm finding I don't have time to flip over to that.
I'll do that.
Rom, when is this call scheduled to end, by question?
Mm. In 28 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. And you should see the agenda we have after you guys leave, which probably most of us going to be be postponed. I don't know. But Carrie, you agree that the, I mean, Nick, who is, and dub dub dub. There's no use going down a path of getting IDN versions of those.
But these things are protocol elements.
Yes.
Yeah. And a protocol element is not a word.
Right. Okay. So I don't think, and somebody correct me if you think I'm wrong, but we probably don't need to spend any time on this one. Okay, let's go on to sorry, I'm trying to write myself a note here. Okay, going down then to geographic and geopolitical. Now, we're not going to talk, I suppose that if there's any reservation of geographic and geopolitical names, and I don't know whether there will be ever or not, that certainly the IDN version of those in the official languages, scripts of whatever countries involved, should probably be reserved as well. Throw that out to you first of all, Carrie, and then see if anybody in the group has comments or questions.
Once again, the specific question that I'm being asked to answer?
Some agreements, as you know, have reservations regarding, name reservations regarding geographic and geopolitical
yes.
names. And you know that the GAC is, of course, uh-huh. for that. The question is, if there are reservations of names in ASCII for geographic and geopolitical names, is it reasonable to assume that then the, at least in the scripts for which a particular country, that a particular country uses officially, they should be reserved, in the A and U form should be reserved as well.
I would actually invert that. That to the extent that there is any justification for any such reservation, I would have thought that the local representations are the ones that are deserving of the greater protection.
Can I ask a clarification question, Chuck?
Sure.
Carrie, does that mean, for example, if we're reserving the CCTLDs, they would all, for example, would have all the IDN version of...
The TCs don't have... The TCs have character, have codes. They have two-letter codes, two-letter ASCII codes. Those are not names of countries. They may or may not be abbreviations of the English names of countries. So at this point, there's a segment of the namespace that hasn't been populated, and that's geopolitical entities wishing to have TLD labels for themselves. And I would suspect that the most valuable such designation is the one that has the most meaning locally, and that would be up to the community to decide how much beyond that they would like to see protected, rather than somehow flattening the names of all the countries and governed entities in the world into an ASCII space and then trying to work backwards from there into the local environment.
Mm-hmm.
I would suspect that this is going to be one of the issues that the GAC CCMSO working group is likely to focus some attention on. And we might want to defer to their initial thinking before proceeding very much here.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to my question, I understand what you said, Carrie, that you think that the local representation is more important than the ASCII. It could be, though, that we end up with, just like in some agreements today, that there's some reservation requirements with regard to the ASCII for those and any in the future that might happen. It seems like it makes sense that the A and U versions of the ASCII ones should also be reserved. Is that a reasonable?
By definition, there is no U version of an ASCII anything.
I'm sorry, I meant A. The A version.
This is Osprey. Can I comment?
Germany or is
okay. There we have a prime example of something that doesn't go into the IDN realm. But the local designation for Germany is Deutschland. It doesn't
right.
require any decorated Latin characters. And if the government of Germany in addition to its cclabel.de, feels need for an extensive representation of its name. Deutschland is likely to be it. I mean, the DE is a very useful abbreviation of it. I think actually the DE is blessed almost by being an abbreviation of the local name of the country rather than an Anglophone, the English name of the country. So the real issue here is not so much what names ought to be permitted, but is the notion of there being two national domains in parallel operation. .de is the German national domain. .Deutschland as the German national domain. Is that a tenable concept in and of itself? But again, I suspect these are prime issues for GAC and CCNSO consideration. If you have, I suppose what you're saying is that if we are going to protect a name, both in its anglified, ASCIIfied representation and what we would assume to be the prime local representation, if that local representation requires the use of non-ASCII characters, sure, we're going to need to reserve the U label.
Yeah, and that answers my question.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Good. Any other questions on this one?
This is Aubrey. Can I ask a quick question?
Okay.
And basically, the question I want to sort of ask is, I understand that we need to wait until we've talked, but I don't know if I understand why we want to anticipate their requests in terms of adding more names, basically taking names out of the GTLB basket and putting them into the CCTLB basket without having had to negotiate that first. And so for us to do it unilaterally seems to me, I mean, the decision remains somewhat in abeyance about the country's name in the script, in the national script, but I don't know that we want to actually decide that in advance of having to.
Well, and of course, our recommendations can approach that exactly like you're saying. So what we recommend is entirely up to us as a working group, so we can actually word a recommendation to accomplish, I think, what you just said.
Okay.
Ms. Edmund, can I?
Okay, Edmund.
Actually, at least for the second level, the newer contracts have wording that says, geographical names in all related official languages as well. So I just want to bring that up to the attention to that for the second level, that's anticipated already.
Okay. Now, because our time is so short, the remaining categories are names reserved at the third level, other names reserved at the second level, which are a bunch of different reservation lists by five or six registries, and then controversial names. So what I want to do to cover those, and in particular calling on the people that are working on those categories, have the principles that we've talked about and the input we've received from Carrie and Rom given you sufficient guidance for you to deal with IDNs in your recommendations and reports, or are there other specific questions that you would like to ask?
Yeah, it's Tim Denton here.
Go ahead, Tim.
Rom, in relation to ICANN...
I don't know that Rom is still on.
Oh, okay. Terry, in relation to ICANN and IANA reserve names, with the exception of example, what, in simple terms, was your recommendation or advice?
That we regard them as integral designators broaching no translation.
Just like your first category, Tim. ICANN names.
Without translation, right? It's just whatever they are.
I'm not worrying about semantic meaning.
If you want to get punched in the nose, give the RFC editor a name in another language.
I don't want to fight with the IETF. Thank you.
Oh, it's fun to fight with the IETF.
Oh, Jesus! You've never seen a Donnybrook till you've been with the IETF. Okay, thank you.
Aubrey has, I think. Okay. Anybody else have questions for Kerry?
Thank you, Kerry.
You're welcome. It was a lot of fun being here.
Okay. Well, thank
you. I have one more question, if you don't mind. Kerry, you mentioned that the general proposition that the farther you get away from the root, essentially the safer you are. I was wondering if you could just give a quick description of the technical reason, what the difference is between the top level and the second level, for example.
There's actually a theological component to the reasoning, and that is because the essence of one of the essential attributes of the DNS is this point of administrative delegation. There is no mechanism that makes it possible to propagate policies through all levels of any zone, and even if there was such a mechanism, there's no reasonable way to police it unless there was some TLD that provided unique name service for all names in it, that there was a single zone, as it were. So because there's no way that I can know what's going on the fourth level, and even less possibility of me knowing what's going on goes on the fifth level, at some point I have to turn off my concern or I don't sleep at night. So working backwards from that, if it makes no sense thinking about the fifth level and it makes no sense thinking about the fourth level, I can think about the third level. I need to think even more about the second level, and my business is thinking about the top level.
That help, Mike?
Not tremendously, but I'd like to take that offline, Kerry. Maybe you and I can help.
Okay. I labeled my initial statement as a simplistic belief. and if you expect massive, objective, supporting argumentation for it, then it's no longer simplistic.
Not massive, really just a brief statement of a technical principle would help me to understand.
It's the non-propagatability of policies down the tree that's the basis of the belief.
I think that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have a question for Kerry?
This is Tim. Tim Ruiz, GoDaddy. I just want to thank Kerry and Ron too, if he's still listening. I thought this was very valuable. Appreciate the time you took.
Hey, great. Anytime. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Kerry.
Sure.
You're released.
Okay. Thanks. Bye bye.
Okay. All right. Well, folks, we've got we're obviously not going to cover our agenda today. But let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to skip past the reports to cover some things that we all need to be aware of, and then talk about how we're going to get done. I think the time today was critical for all of us in our report, so I have no problems with the time we spent. But I want to skip to the timeline in the agenda. We have two scheduled meetings left, next Thursday, March 8th, and Thursday, March 15th. In essence, next week, the reports have to be mostly done. 95% done, probably, because we really need next week to discuss the recommendations as a group for each of the reports and to, see where we've got agreement, see where we haven't, so that we can modify that. We have to, on March 15th, basically approve what's going into our final report, so we can't wait till then to do very much work. Now, I'll come back to other options for maybe adding a meeting. We'll talk about that in a minute. The deadline for us to approve the report is March 15th. I suppose we could have another meeting on the 16th and submit it the same day. But it's due on the 16th of March. That's the group final report. I have already started working on a template and some of the background information and so forth of that report. So I'm less concerned about actually finalizing the final report than I am about getting the individual reports finalized and working group agreement on what our recommendations are. So that's going to be our high priority next Thursday. But there's quite a bit we need to do before we even get to that point. Second thing I wanted to talk about, depending on how much progress we make between now and the 15th of March, I want to make sure that we have maximum participation in the meeting on the 15th of March. Right now it's scheduled for the same time as this meeting, but it'll have to end at the end of 2 hours because there's a GNSL council meeting right after that. So if people think we need more time than 2 hours, we could move it up an hour and try that. Any thoughts on that?
Chuck, this is Patrick. Can I suggest something?
Sure.
Would it be possible to have a call between those two dates?
I'm actually going to come back to that, Patrick. I just kind of wanted to see people to see kind of the end, and then we'll come back to that. I do want to talk about that. As far as action items, assuming we had gotten through the reports, we're going to have to really be very close to finished product, and they need to be distributed by Wednesday for every one of the groups. It'd be nice if any of them can be submitted sooner. I've submitted the one for the tag names. It's probably very close, if not to final format. It's one of the things we were going to talk about today. But it would be very helpful if we could have gone through each of the reports at least briefly today before our meeting next Thursday, because next Thursday we really need to be focusing on primarily the recommendations, maybe a little bit of time on role if there's any disagreement in role. But the primary thing where we're going to have some controversy, especially in some of the topics, is with regard to the recommendations. They will need to move from straw recommendations into recommendations of the working group. And so that'll probably take our whole call next Thursday. So now back to Patrick's suggestion. Is there I'm assuming that very few people could continue this call longer. Is that a false assumption?
I can't.
Yeah, so there's two already.
I couldn't either, Chuck.
So we're seeing, and that doesn't surprise me. Plus, it's kind of asking a lot to go more than 2 hours. So you kind of lose effectiveness when you make them too long. It seems to me like Patrick suggested that we really could use another meeting between now and next Thursday. And so the question is, this time seems to work about as well as any time. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. It doesn't fit everybody's schedule, as we know. But is there, and Glenn, if you would help us out in terms of conflicting meetings, can you tell us, you can probably look up the master calendar quicker than I can, on Monday through Wednesday next week, what conflicting meetings are there on the GNSO master calendar?
One opening would be next Monday. I'll tell you why, because we usually have a Who Is call, and there are no more Who Is calls, so that would be quite free, Monday afternoon or Monday.
So at the same time?
At the same time, I think, would work, yes.
Okay. Is that the only
If it would work for everybody.
I understand that. We'll talk about that in a minute.
We've got a conflicting call on Tuesday. Well, not really at the same time, but there is an IDN call on Tuesday, which is much earlier than this call. Wednesday would probably be a possibility, too.
And obviously, it'd be better if we can do it sooner rather than later.
Yes,
we have
exactly.
A little bit of time in between our meetings.
So if you'd like, what about putting it in on Tuesday at the same time?
Well, you said Monday.
Oh, no, sorry. There is a call at that time already.
What about tomorrow?
Tomorrow is Friday.
But then we're working into people's weekends, like we did
yes.
last week. Yeah.
Yes.
Are there any conflicts tomorrow?
There are no conflicts tomorrow, but Friday at this time is a bad time.
It's a bad time? Because
I don't think you're going to get, it's not a good time for calls.
Okay, so let's talk about Monday as a group. Is there anybody that can't make a call this time on Monday?
Sir, Tim, I'll be in Washington, D.C. at a conference. Obviously, there must be some way I could make this call. It's just that it would be, more convenient another day.
Okay, got it. Other people, who else cannot has conflicts on Monday at this time? All right,
Chuck, it's John. I have a conflict.
Okay. Anybody else? So it sounds like, I suspect that any time and day we pick, we're going to have some conflicts, especially since it wasn't pre-scheduled. But I'm going to, you know, unless I hear more objections, let's go ahead and schedule a call for Monday, same time, and be the same call-in information. And then we will finish today's agenda to hopefully give the various groups enough time to be able to have a couple days in before our meeting on Thursday. In the meantime, keep plugging away, because it's just 1 week until we really need to have the reports really 95% complete, if not a little bit more, other than final recommendations. And by next Thursday, again, we need everybody to at least have your straw recommendations done. Now, if you can't reach rough consensus in your subgroup, then please provide alternative recommendations for the full group to consider. Okay? Preferably, we'd like to see things that the group has reached rough consensus in, and then we'll go from there. That doesn't mean we still wouldn't look at alternatives, but that's what I'd like you to shoot for. Are there any questions on that?
Chuck, this is Tim. So we're planning on 2 hours again on Monday then?
I think we'll need it, Tim. I'll do my best to make it brief, but I think by the time we go through all of the reports, and keep in mind what we're going to do, very brief updates, look at the role and where you're at with regard to straw recommendations, talk about what needs to be done in the reports to get them near final. I don't know if any of you had a chance to look at the single and two-character name. They obviously got some new things, new information today to add to their work, but it the report's looking really good. Yes?
Can I just ask, this is Tamara, can I just ask that we do maybe the reports in the reverse order of normal, so that some of the reports that usually fall at the end can get...
Yeah, I did that once, reversed them because of reports getting short. I can certainly do that again. I don't have any problem with that, although I think I would like, unless there's objections in the group, to deal with the low-hanging fruit, because I think there's a couple at least that we can knock off. Okay? But after that, then, sure, I'd be more than happy to do that. Okay? I did that once already.
I do remember that you did. I just want to make sure all the...
Yeah. You know, it's a good point. So...
I'm sorry, Chuck, so you asked for everybody to try to get their complete straw recommendations in by Monday or
no,
over the weekend?
By next Thursday we need to have
okay,
those
good.
Done.
No,
okay. No, what we're going to do, hopefully most of you, if not all of you, have already done what we needed for the meeting on Monday. We're gonna finish the agenda. We're going to go through every one of the reports and see where we are staff on what needs to be done before Thursday, but I'm telling you that keep in mind, you need to plan to have your straw recommendations done by your subgroup by Thursday.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
And to the extent possible, if they can be sent, your reports can be sent to the list, you know, end of the day Wednesday, that would help for those who at least get up early and are different time zones could maybe take a glance at them. That's helpful. Okay, any other questions? Thanks, everybody. Talk to you on Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.